The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This is an exclusive presentation of Podcast One Sports.
What up? This is Robert Ory.
Ory, three-point. Buries it.
You might know me as Big Shot Bob.
To Ory for three. Oh, unbelievable. This guy is off the charts.
What's going on, Big Shot Bob?
Robert Ory from downtown.
Now that's making a statement.
Such fanfare to start the show. The Big Shot.
Speaking
Bob
of fanfare.
Pod. Oh, here we go. Right out of the gates.
Speaking of fanfare.
I'm Rob Jenners. That's Robert Ory. All yours.
And I'm a huge fan of this young lady. And I'm glad to have her on the show. My friend, Jamie Maggio. What's up, Jamie?
What's up, Rob and Rob? Rob 1, Rob 2. Guys, thanks for having me on with you today.
We're like the Minions, Rob 1 and Rob 2. I want us to put a sign on our head or something. I don't know. It's crazy. But
am I the one with the big butt? You know the minion.
That's hard to differentiate.
Sure, let's say yes.
I'm gonna be the minion with the big butt.
You'd be the big ass minion. So I guess, Rob, how do you and Jamie know each other? Because we were kind of talking a little bit before we started. Like, you guys go pretty far back, right?
Yeah, Jamie is one of the smartest young ladies I know, not just in sports, in everything. So why wouldn't we have her here? I think we've been knowing each other 20 plus years, right, Jamie?
I think it has been about
that. Yeah, because it goes back to Sports Spectacular.
Jamie looks like she's only 22, so that's
it goes back to Sports Spectacular. Jamie used to always bug me about what flight do you want? And she was so sweet because you know how athletes can be. Jamie, I need another flight. Jamie, change this flight. And I was always apologizing to her. And she was like, don't worry. You know, you're not the worst athlete I have to deal with.
I know Jamie a while. Down Ory to get his travel stuff. You know, in particular, he's a big dude. He's got certain flights he wants to be on. I want to make sure I can book him in a first class seat. And he was ghosting me before ghosting was a thing.
He may have invented it.
Your flight information. Help me help you. I threw the Jerry Maguire line at him. But yeah, we know each other for a long time. Had the opportunity to work together for 4 years at Spectrum, which was a ton of fun. So good people.
Are you?
Yeah, and I still look at our Christmas picture when we wore the sweaters, the ugly sweaters. That's like one of my favorite pictures.
So, Jamie, you still work for Spectrum?
I don't. Okay. I work for CBS and I work for Fox Sports West and I work for Tennis Channel.
Gotcha.
Anyone who will pay me, basically.
If there's a paycheck involved, I'm all in. But you do work for the Clippers, right? You do work for the Clippers?
Yep. I work on the Clippers broadcast for Fox Sports West, doing sideline reporting. I've been there for the last, I think this is my fourth season with them.
That's cool. Well, you're on a show today where we have Western Conference foes, maybe, question mark. Steve Kerr is going to join us here in a little bit. I would imagine covering the Clippers as much as you do, you're pretty familiar out west with the Warriors and kind of what they got going on this year.
I've heard of those guys.
You've heard of them? Yeah, they've come up maybe once or twice. Yeah,
a bit of a fall from grace, but they're on the comeback trail.
They're on the comeback trail if they can stay healthy. And we're going to talk to Steve about that.
Maybe Draymond doesn't take the last shot of the game, you know? Not that there was anything wrong with that, but
is that what was going on? Or we should talk to Steve about that.
Yeah, that'll probably come up.
It's weird that you look at teams that are so good for so long, and all of a sudden they just fall flat on their face, speaking of the Warriors, and all of a sudden you get a top pick in the draft. Think about the Lakers, what they did, the Clippers, what they had to do. And you would never think, you look at Golden State, oh, they're winning young. They look across that board, they're young. They can stay together for 10 to 15 years, right? And all of a sudden, injury happens. You know, COVID happens. They got one of the top picks in the draft. And who knows, you know, that what's going to happen after that. But it's always interesting to see how you fall from grace really fast and then how fast you can rise up.
Yeah. Well, so we'll talk to Coach Kerr about that coming up in a few minutes. Before we get to Coach Kerr, I think the biggest story of the week was probably the NBA All-Star game, just because it seemed like it popped up out of nowhere. It's going to be here in Atlanta where I'm at. And then, like, none of the players wanted any part of it. Adam, just do you guys think that had to do with the fact that they agreed early on not to do one and then just decided last minute we're going to throw one on the players? Or why is everybody against this game all of a sudden?
I mean, it's kind of common sense, right? I mean, this world that we're living in right now and the fact that in order to have a successful NBA season last year when pretty much the predicament was the same, they created a bubble, and you know, it just seems like the risk maybe doesn't outweigh the reward. But as my 10th grade economics teacher told me, money is the answer to everything. So, you know, they're trying to recover some money, and everybody's taking a hit this year. So I understand it from that viewpoint. But I don't think the players are looking to like book vacations or anything like that. I think it's just a little bit of a double standard. It doesn't really make sense.
Yes, I think it boils down to what you promise players. There's this thing in this game that is kind of a shaky line we call loyalty. You know, they always want players to show loyalty. The player has to show loyalty. The player has to show loyalty. But does the team and the league show loyalty? Like, you told these guys you're going to have All-Star off because it was a shortened offseason. And you think you take the Lakers in the Heat. They only have 71 days off. That's short. Now you're back into the game and you play almost every other day. Your body is taking a pounding, and we see the rash of injuries that are going around the league. And so that's what the guys are talking about. You know, they could care less about All-Star. I know the only guys that probably care about the All-Star are the selfish guys who have it in a contract where they get a big bonus for that. But I think it just boils down to what you promised us. Okay, if you think about it, the league wasn't going to start till January. It was supposed to start later and later because they said, we need our rest. Then the league says, okay, we can start up. They started up early, but you promised the 2 weeks off. And I think the guys are depending on that time off to recharge their batteries. Think about it. This is a crazy world we live in now. You know, you got all the protocols for COVID-19, and you have all these things outside of sports that you have to deal with, you know, from the Black Lives Matter moving to, you know, voting, to all these things that were bombarding these guys. And sometimes you need to go somewhere, you need to decompress, and you need those 2 weeks to get your mind and your psyche right. And so I think that's what the players are upset about, that you promised us something and now you're trying to take it away from us.
And if you can't go to Magic City while you're in Atlanta, to
then what the hell are we doing?
Hey,
come on,
you
who
get the
will
wings,
set
baby?
That standard, man? I mean, come
hey,
on. How are we
you
not?
You got to get know? The wings. Jamie, next time you see Clipper Darrell, just ask Clipper Darrell about the wings, man.
Are they really that good? Because I've been in Atlanta 15 years. I've never had the wings at Magic City.
Do a drive-by, man. Just do a drive-by.
Just a quick drive-by? You know, okay.
Yeah, do a drive-by.
Honey, I went to the strip club for the wings. I swear I was there for the wings.
Who said you had to stay to do a drive-by? Hey, I'm not even going to lie. I was in Atlanta one time, and my buddy and I, we stopped by, and we got some barbecue that's right outside. You know, and I have outside the club. They had a little stand set up. We got 5 miles down the road. I made him turn around and go back so I could get some
more
for tomorrow. Oh. It was just that good. So, you know, you got that Southern cooking is something special, man.
Did those hold up? Leftover wings?
Yeah, they're better the next day because, you know, the sauce is, you know, it soaks into the meat and you slap the mugs in the microwave or a little toaster oven. You're good to go.
I like it. All right. Well, wings at Magic City. There's your piece of advice if you're coming to town for the NBA All-Star game. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about Kevin Durant. We're going to talk about a number of other things we've got to get to. Lamar Odom and just a number of things. But first, Coach Steve Kerr.
Hey, Coach.
How you doing, Robert?
I'm good, man. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Good to see you.
Thank you so very much for taking the time out, man. I really appreciate
sure.
it. So you don't even know how much of a fan I am of yours.
Stop it.
I'm
no,
serious.
Please go on. Go on, please.
Yeah,
flatter our guests.
Because I feel like we're a kindred spirit, man. You know, we both wore 25. We both, you know, right. And for 10 years, we owned the NBA, man. That's what I'm talking about. For 10 years, you and I, we owned the NBA. And people don't even know that. So I said, when I started this podcast, the first person I said I wanted on the show, I said, I got to get Steve Kerr.
I reached
out to our man and said, hey, yo, give me Steve Kerr. He's like, I own it. I didn't think he was going to happen, but man, thanks for being here, man.
I love that stat. Is that the 10 years in a row? Is that one of us was in the finals or one of us actually won?
We won.
One of us won a championship for 10 straight years.
Yeah. 94, 95. Then you're four in a row.
That's right.
And I think, see, people never talk about that. You won four rings in a row. That's impressive, man.
And then you won the next three with the Lakers, right?
Correct. Uh-huh.
And then I went back to the Spurs in 03 and won.
Yep.
And did that end the streak or did you go?
You ended the streak because I won the two back-to-back, then I won the three in a row, and I only won five.
And then you won in 05 and 07 also?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. So 10 in a row and like 12 out of 14 or something like that.
Exactly. See,
we are burdened with remembering all the championships we've won and in the order in which we've won them.
You know, if some GM had been smart, they would have signed us both to like max deals and we would have just kept winning titles because it was for sure us.
You know, yes.
It was definitely all about us.
You guys carried the weight, right?
Yeah, you know, right. Steve and I put in work, you know. He's just, you know, all those other guys, they didn't come to play. We came to play.
Steve, how you feeling? I know this season's been a little up and down for you guys. You know, you've had some hard-fought wins, a couple tough losses. How you guys feeling with where you're at so far this year?
Well, we kind of feel like we're close. You know, we're doing a lot of things well. The start of the season was a disaster, but it was for a lot of teams. But for us, you know, given that we had James Wiseman as, you know, our starting center, and he didn't even have a training camp, you know, to throw a rookie out there with several new players, Draymond, no training camp. So the first four or five games, we were a complete disaster. But since then, I think we've really come together. Our defense has gotten very solid, and I think we're close, but we're just not quite there yet. You know, we're 500 for a reason. We're just kind of mediocre, but I really think we have another step to take.
What's that step, Coach? In what areas?
So the two biggest areas are rebounding and defending without fouling. Those things are killing us. So right now, I think we give up the most free throws per game, and our rebounding percentage is near the bottom, if not at the bottom of the league. So, you know, we're something like top five in defensive field goal percentage. So we're getting stops, but we're not completing the play. We're either fouling or not rebounding. And so when we do those two things, then we get out in transition and we're really tough to handle. So if we can get consistent with those two things, I think we'll start winning more close games and kind of get over the hump.
I look at your team, Coach, and if you look down the line, you got some great defensive players. And I look at Looney, who I'm a huge fan of. I think the guys that put in a lot of work that don't get a lot of praise, especially on a team when you're playing with a big three. And, of course, Draymond, I love guys who have a workhorse mentality. Do you think that if you say put more of a defensive scheme in and want to say, hey, we're going to press full court, go old school, put Wiseman in the back to block some shots, you know, make it a little fun, because sometimes I think, you know, we get caught up in shooting these three balls so much and not enjoying the game, because I watching you guys play, it doesn't seem like you enjoy the game so much, because it seems like everybody has this pressure of being a champion again. And so what do you do on a daily basis to try to keep that joy in the game and not have them put so much pressure on themselves?
Yeah, that's the hardest thing about playing during the pandemic, Robert. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the season itself loses so much luster, just no fans in the building. The games are kind of eerie. You know, it's like a apocalyptic environment that, you know, you're trying to play an NBA game and there's nobody there. And then there's like this piped in crowd noise and, you know, it's weird. And then
that seems very weird.
It's strange. And then, you know, every day you're getting up, you're testing, you're wearing your mask. And so, you know, the focus for us this year has been just trying to remind the guys that we're very lucky to be playing. You know, we're lucky to be earning our paychecks and taking care of our families and being able to play basketball, because that's our refuge. But you're right. Like our identity over the years has been the joy of our team. And a lot of that comes from Steph. And so it's been more difficult to do that during the pandemic, just because of the circumstances in the world. I mean, it's just not, life's not as happy these days for anybody.
Yeah, I know.
But we're trying our best to get.
Sometimes you have to manufacture that happiness, especially in a mad world we live in now. So
yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, no doubt. We were talking last week about Draymond after the little scuff up him and Magruder got into after the game. And I just love Draymond's attitude on and off the floor. I think he's just so much fun, and he kind of doesn't really let anything get to him too much. But if you shake his cage enough, you'll get him to speak his mind. What does he bring to your team in the locker room?
Draymond is incredible. I mean, first of all, he's an amazing defender. He's one of the great defenders, I think, in the history of the league. He guards everybody. He's the perfect defender for the modern game because he covers so much ground. He can guard point guards, challenge their step back threes, and then also guard centers and battle them down low and box out. And so he brings so much defensive acumen. He really ties our defense together. And then personality-wise, he and Steph are such a great combination. You know, we talked about Steph's joy, and Steph looks like a kid out there playing. He has so much fun. And Draymond is just, a ball of fire. And they actually remind me, there was a great documentary. I'm a little older than you guys, but,
No, you're not.
I was going to say, didn't you all play together?
I'm a couple years older than you, Robert. But I don't know. Rob and Jamie, you guys are maybe a little dated on this one, but Borg and McEnroe, you know, when they played tennis.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Best rivalry. So you got, yeah. And there was a great documentary about those guys called Fire and Ice. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out.
It's very good.
But it reminds me of Steph and Draymond. You know, Steph is Borg and Draymond is McEnroe. And it's actually the perfect balance for our team to have those two sort of opposite forces, because they really balance each other out and complement one another.
I guess that would make Clay the ref then.
Clay would be what?
Clay's the ref?
He would be the ref. He'd be the ref in the middle, like, hey, hey.
That's right. That's right.
You like the fire and ice combination, and I get that. But after the Magruder comments after the game, do you pull Draymond aside and say, can you tone it down a little bit? Or like, do you give him any feedback on something like that?
Not on that one in particular. that's just players being players. And I really didn't even know what happened and how the whole thing started. But I've sort of figured out, you know, with my relationship with Draymond, we know each other so well now, and believe it or not, we're actually a lot alike. People would never guess that, because I look very mild mannered on the sidelines, but, there's a competitive desire that runs through both of our blood that is, borderline insane. And it manifests itself in different ways, but we understand each other's competitiveness. And so I rein him in when I feel like it's necessary for the team. But in order for Draymond to be Draymond, you also got to let him go. And so that's the balance that I try to find as his coach.
You know, you speaking of letting guys go, both played for Phil and Pop. You know, when I played for Pop, he didn't quite understand me until my second or third year, when they would just go, do the Robert Horry thing. He knows what he's doing. And you always appreciate a coach who knows who you he knows who you are, and he lets you, because whatever you do, 9 times out of 10 is going to benefit the team. So out of those two, Phil and Pop, who would you call needed some advice?
If I needed some advice?
Yes.
So I'm gonna get to that, but if you don't mind, I'm really intrigued by what you just said.
Uh-huh.
That Pop didn't understand you for a couple of years. Would you mind explaining that?
Sure. So when I, you know, people don't know this Spurs. The Spurs has about 100 plays. And so their playbook is deeper. And their playbook is A, B, C, D. It's no deferring. And so I'm from a background, you read a situation, you go back door or you play basketball in a sense. And on the Spurs, if you did that, they would literally stop and look at like, hey, what are you doing? We don't do that. And but, you know, coach of Bucks now would get mad at me. I'm like, dude, I'm playing basketball. That's what you do. I had a back door. Just give me the ball. Let me lay it up, you know. Right. And so told Michael Finley this. I said, dude, when you get here, you have to kind of dumb your game down. Because we're taught to read a situation, dude. But here, no, you run the play through. And I didn't know that. I know, okay, this is just playing basketball. So I have to learn how to run the plays to the end.
It's interesting that you say that, because I had a similar experience. And I played for the Bulls before. So I played for Phil before I played for Pop, which you did too, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. And
so I loved the triangle offense. The triangle basically saved my career, you know, because I wasn't really a point guard. You know, I wasn't quick enough to be a point guard. I wasn't big enough to be a two guard. I was just a basketball player. But mm-hmm. in the triangle, you just play basketball. And, you know, if a guy in the backcourt, if Lindsey Hunter picked me up full court, you know, I just passed to Scottie Pippen and cross-trained, and Scottie brought it up. And but on any other team, Lindsey would have turned me six times. And by the time I got the ball past half court, the coach would be like, I can't play this guy at point guard. You know, so the triangle was perfect for me. And what I loved about it is there was a format, but you could really improvise within it. Like you were saying, you just kind of played basketball. You just had to get to certain spots. And then, you know, there was a lot of read and react stuff. So when I got to San Antonio, I had the exact same experience. I would cut. And Coach Bud or Pop would be like, why are you cutting? It's like, well, because there was a lane. They're like, no, you stay out there. Tim's going to go to work. And it drove me nuts. And so I wasn't really very comfortable playing in that offense at all, to be honest with you. But having said that, I adored Pop and learned a ton from him. And my second year, or my second stint with the Spurs, which was my last year of my career, that was when Tony and Manu had gotten there, and the game had become much more fluid, and I think Pop loosened up quite a bit by that time too.
He loosened up a lot after I left because it was one game we were playing Golden State Warriors. It was Michael Finley, myself, Rocket, and the Warriors beating us by like 20 points. And we brought it back to like 9. And he took us out, and I was heated. I was like, what are you doing? He said, well, the game in reach now. Because of us. No, don't. And he put the starters again. Let's just say we lost that game by 20 points. And he looked at me. He's like, I was like, yeah, it's your fault we lost this game, because you should let us out there. Because, you know, there are teams, people don't understand, there are teams in this league that can't, you know, match up with other teams. They might not, they might go. It's just a disadvantage. And you play basketball, and Pop let us go until, you know, he tried to coach.
Well, it's one of my favorite things about Pop is how he's evolved as a coach.
You know? Oh, big time. Yes.
And I think that's what all coaches want to be able to do. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to do that as well. I'm still a relatively young coach. but from the time I got there in 99 to when I came back in 03, the style had really shifted. And then the next era that you were a part of, kind of 03 to about 2010, it really evolved into Manu and Tony's teams after about maybe 07. You know, Tim dominated, and then all of a sudden it became a much more guard-oriented team. And so I've just really enjoyed seeing Pop evolve as the game has evolved. Yeah. And he's been an inspiration to me. So the answer to your question that you asked a while ago is I lean on Pop for advice. But a lot of that, too, is that we're both coaching. We see each other all the time. I'm coaching on his staff, with Team USA last summer in the World Cup, or, you know, and this coming summer in the Olympics. And so all of this is, the relationship is current, whereas with Phil being retired, we don't talk as often. But the two of them have been just incredible mentors for me, and the influence they each had on me completely made my NBA career. You know, I made it before I met those guys, but I was just a, you know, marginal player. I might have only had a, you know, 5-6 year career if I hadn't found Tex Winter and Phil in Chicago and been part of that team and then moved on to Pop. And I would definitely wouldn't be the coach of the Warriors if I hadn't met those guys, because so much of what I've learned came directly from them. So very, very lucky to have this incredible apprenticeship.
Last summer, you were part of probably the biggest pop culture phenomenon in The Last Dance, just reliving the Bulls years. Was that cool for you to go back and kind of relive some of the nostalgia of those days? And how much of what you saw was kind of like real to what that team was, and how much was maybe kind of blown up a little bit for the sake of the documentary?
No, it was a great documentary, and it was fun to watch because I hadn't seen any of the footage. And you know, my wife and I watched with our kids, and they're all in their 20s now. So it was fun for them to see what, you know, our lives were like when they were toddlers.
Dad could play. Look, he could really play.
Like, see, look at that. But it was great. And you know, back then, we didn't have all the shows like Hard Knocks or, you know, behind the scenes type stuff that they have now, which is, you know, I think amazing TV. It's incredible as a sports fan to see the behind the scenes footage. But back then, that just did not happen. And so that year when Phil came in and told us that there was going to be a camera crew following us all year, they were going to make a documentary about us, it was very strange. And the first month was really weird. Like, you know, you just felt the cameras there all the time.
Was it intrusive at all?
What's that?
Was it intrusive at all? Or
yeah, it was very intrusive. And then you, after a while, we just got used to it. And but then what happened was 20 years went by. You know, or more, I guess 22 years.
No documentary. What the hell?
No documentary. And there were all these rumors, you know, that, oh, Spike Lee's got it. Now, you know, he's going to direct it. And then nothing came out. And so when it finally came out, it was really fun to watch.
Wow.
So do you feel like that made you more famous?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
It's not winning the championships as a coach or a player, but it's you being on a documentary, right? And so it's weird how things like that. I've become more famous in the last couple of days just of a simple tweet, you know, telling Tom Brady, welcome to the 7-Chip Club.
I love it.
You have those moments.
That's great. Yeah, one more and Tom can pass you. So
yeah. I'm kind of rooting against him. I want to keep him. I want to keep him with me. That way, the more praise he gets, hey, I got 7-2. So I get a little of that love too. But if he passes me, I'm just gonna be left in the wind.
He's hanging out there.
Can I go back to Pop and Phil for a second? And for both Robin and for Steve, having played under those guys, when Harden goes to the Nets, everyone's like, pray for Steve Nash on Twitter. But both Phil and Pop had such large personalities, big stars, incredible runs at high level. So what do you think about both of those coaches that made them such a good player's coach and to be able to achieve the level of success that they both did?
I think for me, the Pop and Phil were very different in their methods, but they were very similar in their self-confidence and in their ability to really guide the team and hold this power over the team, but also make it inclusive. Like, but with both guys, you just, everybody had tremendous respect for both of them. And you did not want to disappoint them. And yet they went about their business in totally different ways. But the power of their personality, the unique ways that they implemented their style and their culture, everybody respected and enjoyed. And so that's where they were very similar. And I think that's probably the key to any coaching position, you know, is can you maintain authority, but also really empower guys to feel good about their position with the team. And finding that balance is not easy, but that's something that Phil and Pop did really well.
Did you have a favorite teammate? I always ask that question to former players. It's kind of a loaded question, but
When
you don't have to say Robert Ori, it's okay. You don't have.
We weren't teammates.
Oh, that's right. You guys missed each other by like a year. I forgot. Yeah.
You know, I had a lot of. A lot of guys who I love playing with, great friends, you know, who I've stayed in touch with. But I would say the best teammate I ever had was Tim Duncan, just because of his unique balance of confidence and humility. I think Steph Curry is so much like Tim. He's got more flash and flair to his game. Obviously, Tim was a workhorse, and Steph is a showman. But they both had this incredible combination of humility off the court, where everybody could see, you know, they were all in and committed to their teammates, and then dominance on the floor. And that's a powerful combination. So Timmy was the best teammate I've ever had.
All right. So I have to ask you this question, because I can't ask this question to many people. Out of all your rings as a player, you know, I have like, I have one that I like just for personal reasons. I have one that I felt is my hardest ring. So, but I always like to ask this one. On a personal note, which is your favorite ring? I just want to know, like, which one you say, oh, yeah, I put in work for this, and this is the one that I like best. Because I say that about my 2005 championship for Game 5, what I did in the Spurs uniform. I was like, now this one right here, this is mine. I earned this one. So which one is your one that holds dear to your heart?
Well, the one that I feel had the biggest impact on was 97, when I made the shot against Utah in the last game, which was, you know, kind of every young player's dream, you know. And I had a few moments like that. You had a ton of moments like that. So I'm sure it's tough for you to pick which ring you have. But maybe my favorite is actually my last season in the NBA, which was 03 with the Spurs. And I had a couple of good playoff games, but I was 37. I was over the hill. I was kind of winding down. But it was so incredible to have a couple of big moments, you know, at the very end of my career when I knew I was going to retire.
Yeah.
Because I had to work so hard just to keep my body right. You know, it hurt to get out of bed every morning. And you know, but I worked all year just in case I had a chance for a moment. And I had a couple moments during that playoff run that were really special. And it was in a lot of ways that's my favorite, because it was my last season and it was like a culmination of 15 years of work. It's like, okay, I got a championship. I had a couple moments. I can lay the sword down. I can kick back, you know, light up a cigar, have a margarita. And there's a sense of freedom and relief when it's finally over.
You know, it's weird. I think you might say that because I can remember you like it was yesterday, standing on that stage with all your rings, and you just seem like, okay, I can retire. I won this ring. I'm going out on a high note. And you could see the joy in your face. And like, you seemed like you were so happy. And like I know you had that run with the Bulls, but that ring to me seemed, just from your presence on that stage, like you were like, oh yeah, this is the one right here that's going to get home.
Totally. And it's interesting because, you know, everybody retires or leaves the league in different manners. You know, if you have to leave too early before you're ready, it can be really difficult, you know. But for me in that moment, it was perfect timing. And to be perfectly honest, for 15 years, I was swimming upstream. You know, I was never, you know, out on the floor, you know, feeling dominant. It was always a fight. And so by the time I retired, I was so ready just to step away from that nightly grind of having to, you know, swim upstream and have to guard all these guys who were bigger and stronger than I was, and deal with the stress and the pain, all that stuff. So I was ready.
Yeah. I wasn't. My last game was a DeNip by Pop in the playoffs. Against the Lakers. did not play. You know, you never want to go out like that. But I think back on how my career ended. I had a great time, but I would have loved to finish my last game on the court, you know, and just say salute them, because I knew that was my last game. And my body said, you could play one more year. But for me, for personal issues, I just knew I was done. Yeah. Mentally, I couldn't
years,
do it anymore.
How many years did you end up playing?
16.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve, how many did you play in the league?
15.
All right. So you guys are like right there.
Yeah.
As far as length of careers.
But I have to ask one more question before you go, Steve. Okay.
There's one more.
I got one more question. In all honesty, between you and I, let's be honest. Who went to the real U of A? Let's be honest now. Let's be honest.
God, we're doing this. All right.
Come on.
That's fine.
Well, are we talking football or basketball?
You pick, man. You pick. You the guest. You get to pick.
So here's what I would say. I watched Alabama football because they're on TV every week now. I've never heard their fans chant U of A. I hear our fans chant U of A all the time. So we are the real U of A.
There you go.
Okay, I give you that one, Steve. Even though we met y'all in the tournament, we beat them by 20. They was ranked number 2 in the country in basketball. But, you know, I'll let you slide. I give you that because we have our roll tie. You have your U of A.
I remember that game. Yeah, you guys, I think we had Brian Williams and Judd Bushler and –
Yes.
You guys got us pretty good. I think we lost to Alabama before you got there. I think it was my sophomore year in the NCAA tournament. They beat us. They had remember Bobby Lee Hurd?
Oh, yeah, no, Bobby Lee. Yeah.
Bobby Lee Hurd was
a bad boy.
I think Derek McKee was Derek McKee there then or did he
I think he came in after that. Yeah.
Came in after, yeah. But yeah. They had a really good team, so yeah, you guys have gotten us a couple times in the tournament, but we're still the real U of A.
I give you that. All right. Now, you heard it here first. You're the real U of A. I'll let you slide, Coach. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Coach. Really appreciate it. Best of luck the rest of the way, man.
I hope we didn't disturb you too much.
All right. Bye, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Steve.
Very cool to be joined by the coach of the Golden State Warriors, Steve Kerr. And appreciate his time and letting us waste some of it, I guess.
Especially down in SA trying to get ready for a game. So we appreciate you, Steve.
Yeah, man, for sure. All right. Well, one of the other big stories from the NBA this week. What's going on with Kevin Durant? And I guess this is kind of a COVID protocol thing, but the tweet the other night, the free me tweet, and then kind of coming back at the NBA because he was forced to leave Friday night's game he missed Friday night's game against the Raptors, and then was pulled in the third quarter of the next game because someone who had tested positive for COVID-19 had some kind of correlation with the team. I don't know if it was a staffer, if it was a coach or something, but COVID protocol said they haven't gotten their test back, even though Kevin has tested negative, I think, 3 times. They pulled him from the game and they said, this is protocol. This is the way we do it. And he was frustrated by that. And I guess I kind of get that. But coming back at the NBA the way he did, yo, NBA, your fans aren't dumb. You can't fool them with your whack ass PR tactics. #free7. Is he ever right to be this frustrated by it? Because wasn't this the deal going into the season? We knew this stuff was going to happen.
Well, for me, I'm looking at the protocols. You have to adapt. You have to change, and because we're learning more and more information about it. I think what KD is saying, I already went out there. We know this virus can be spread by contact. I just contacted everybody in the game pretty much. I touched the basketball, and the basketball didn't pass around. So it's like, what's the deal here? And I think the NBA is trying to be safe, but I know KD wants to play because he feels like his team has a golden opportunity to make some moves and get to know each other because of the big trade, and they need to still learn how to play together. But it's just weird. Nobody knows what's going on with the protocol. And I think it's going to be an adjustment by the league, adjustment by the players. And it's going to be one of those revolving doors where guys got to just, adapt and keep moving and understand that it's not a slap at you. It's trying to keep everybody safe because we don't know what this virus can do.
Jamie, have you seen this with the Clippers at all?
No, I mean, on the last big road trip, they just came off a 6-game road trip, and Kawhi and PG had to miss the first couple of games because of COVID safety protocols. Mm-hmm. And I think in general, all of us, the players and us, the three of us in our personal lives, like everyone has to just expect the unexpected during this time and roll with the punches. This is nothing that we've ever dealt with before. There is no template. There is no blueprint. You just have to be flexible and adaptable. That being said, I also understand KD's frustration. So, do I think that what he said, I don't think what he said was, too off color, or too strong. Frustrated. That's it. He didn't go below the belt or anything, so I'm okay with what he tweeted. But I understand his frustration for sure.
Yeah, I don't think
every day.
Yeah, I don't think it's guys want to vent. It's no worse than how guys are venting about the All-Star game. So let him vent.
A history with Twitter venting, doesn't he?
Yeah.
From
was it his
account,
real account or was it a fake account?
We both went for the same thing there, man. Both of them like, is this his
Rob
burner? Was
alike.
He tweeting from his burner or what was he doing? My thing is, be frustrated, vent on social, that's fine. This is the, like you just said, Jamie, this is the world we live in right now. You got to roll with the punches. You got to know sometimes you're going to get pulled from something without much explanation, or someone's going to do, like we've dealt with it here at work. Like I work at a radio station in Atlanta. One person has a trace contact and like five people are out. It's just the nature of kind of the world right now. So it's like, you can be frustrated by it, but understand it. You know, don't come back at the NBA and be like, yeah, it's whack ass PR. It's part of the deal these days.
It's frustrating for me also because, you know, On a jump, they kick us all out of the studio because ESPN said, oh, we got this protocol. We can't do this. We can't do that. Now we're just sitting at home twiddling our thumbs, except for Rachel. You know, Rachel still gets to do what she wants to do.
I was going to say, Rachel looks like she's in the studio. She don't look like she's at home. Did you, how much of the Super Bowl did you watch? Did you watch the whole thing?
I watched the whole thing in awe, in shock, and like, what is going on?
We both picked the Chiefs, by the way.
Yeah. Well, and then we realized, oh, crap, I forgot. Their offensive line is depleted, the Chiefs. And you can really see that, and Mahomes can really see that.
We were so wrong. We were so wrong. I mean, Tom Brady just picked apart that defense, too. I mean, just found ways to find the open receivers, and oh, my God. We were all kinds of wrong.
I didn't think we'd be that lopsided,
though. Oh, no, I don't think anybody did. I don't think anybody saw it going that way. But my favorite moment from the whole game didn't even make it on the air, which was the dummy running across the field, the idiot on the field. Because I will tell you that I'm a huge, I'm a huge Kevin Harlan fan. I'm a huge Kevin Harlan fan, and I thought he had far and away the best moment from this whole thing with the call on Westwood Run Radio with Kurt Warner.
Second down, 20, 5:03 to go. Someone has run on the field. Some guy with a bra. And now he's not being chased. He's running down the middle of the 40. Arms in the air and a victory salute. He's pulling down his pants. Put up your pants, my man. Pull up those pants. He's being chased to the 30. He breaks a tackle from a security guard. The 20, down the middle, the 10, the 5. He slides at the 1, and they converge on him at the goal line. Pull up your pants, take off the bra, and be a man. And the players with hands on hips at the other end of the field are looking at him and shaking their head and saying, why, oh, why is this taking place in a Super Bowl?
All right, Kurt.
And Kevin, if you're going to run that far, get into the end zone. Don't slide at the 1. You got to score once you got on the field. Get into the end zone, my man.
Lord, now they're cuffing him.
Kevin Harlan and Kurt Warner.
Hey, it's funny that he said that he has a score, and you know why he was out there, right?
Okay, so I've heard this story, and I think this is bullshit. I'm going to call BS on this story. I think you're about to say what you're about to say.
Well, tell me what you're calling bullshit on.
The prop bet. Did you hear this story?
So no, I didn't hear
the viral story today is that this guy went to a casino and bet a prop bet that there would be a streaker at the Super Bowl. And he put down like 75K or something like that. And the bet was -750 or something like that. So him and his buddy bet the prop and then distracted security and got him on the field so he could collect payment on the bet, which is like a $400,000+ payout.
Wow.
If there was a streaker done that. I can't imagine there's a sports book in the world that's going to pay him now that story's out.
I know, right? But I heard he was doing it because, speaking of scoring, it's for a porn site. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, I thought maybe you would know because, Rob, you know, you got all the contacts being in Atlanta. You know, we just talked about Magic City, so I figure you might can help a brother out and let us know if that's really what's going on.
I'm sorry, run this by me again. What am I trying to figure out? I'm in casino prop betting, and you took me in another direction. So help me out again. What am I?
Someone said he was promoting a porn site.
Oh, yes. So. No, he had some on his shirt.
Was that what you was?
I don't know what it was, but there was some there was something on his shirt. Kevin Harlan, what was on his shirt?
Pull up your pants, take off the bra, and be a man.
All right, well, he thought it was something else, but
what kind of bra is Kevin Harlan experiencing, by the way? That looked like a bra.
It didn't. It looked like a onesie or something.
It was the fact that he didn't miss his beat, though. He didn't miss a beat. It was funny.
Not at all. But yeah, I got to imagine that prop bet story's BS, right?
I say so too.
All right. Well, I thought so. Jamie, did you watch the Super Bowl? How much of it did you watch? Did you watch the whole thing?
I watched until about midway through the third quarter, and then I had to drive to work.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that. What was everybody as let down in the Super Bowl commercials as I was this year? Seems like they don't have the flair that they used to have.
Well, they said they weren't going to spend that much money this year.
Yeah, I guess that's
and
probably.
And so I think my favorite one was the Budweiser one. Where they brought back all the old.
There was an 80s E-Trade. You guys didn't like Rocket Mortgage with Tracy Morgan
was funny. I thought be certain instead of pretty sure. That wasn't bad.
That was pretty good.
I thought the Wayne's World was okay. I love Wayne's World. I thought Mike Myers and Dana Carvey looked pretty old. You know, it was like, it's kind of fun to relive the nostalgia, but then you realize it's 25 years have probably passed since they did the last Wayne's World, and you're like, oh yeah, that's right.
I think the best for me was the premiere of Coming to America 2.
Oh my God.
That's going to be so good. I'm waiting for that.
I can't wait. I love the first Coming to America so much. It's like the I Ching of my childhood. You can just recite it at random, and it's got less. It's just great. It's just my favorite.
Part two doesn't live up to the hype. And I hope that in this case it does.
Yes. It took them long enough.
You know what it is? I think you're right, Jamie. It's probably a nostalgia play. It was like the Wayne's World commercial. It might not live up to the hype, but we're going to do it, and enough people are going to pay attention to it because it's Coming to America, and they brought everybody back. Sherry Headley and you know, Eddie and Arsenio doing all the characters they did in the first movie.
Barbershop.
Yeah, the barbershop, all that stuff. Which I'm excited for because...
It's a boy from Wakanda.
Yeah, what did Arsenio say to him in the trailer? Man, you've been paying 30 years, child support for 30 years, and then you came back to get your son? So, yeah, apparently this whole flick's about Eddie Murphy's kid in New York.
Yes.
He comes back to be the heir of
Wakanda. Queens, New York.
In Queens. Where does one royal find a woman? Queens. Did either of you see the story about Lamar Odom boxing Aaron Carter? Everybody is just shaking their head at me.
Well, didn't he start out with the Clippers? So I'm going to let Jamie take this first.
that was an assist. I'm going to put you as an assist. Where's my scoreboard? Hey.
Why do they do this? I like celebrity boxing. I get the novelty aspect of it, but for me, it just takes away from the actual sport of boxing. And there's an audience, and that's why these matches happen, because there are people that want to see this. I'm not on that side of this debate. I'm not really into the celebrity matchups. You talk about Beavis and Butthead, or no, what were their names again? From Wayne's World.
Beavis and Butthead.
Those guys look fucking old. Did you see Jose Canseco last week?
Oh my God, taking a dive.
For me, I kind of, you know, the only thing they should bring back involving celebrities is celebrity death match. That's the only thing they need to bring back, because that was good. Because one of these celebrities is going to get in there and they're going to get knocked out in a bad situation.
Nate Robinson. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I didn't want to say Nate.
Nate Robinson got stuck in my, sorry.
But for me, I'm thinking about Lamar Odom in the situation he had a couple of years. Wasn't he a little brain dead at one point?
He
was in the hospital for a while?
Yeah, no, he was.
Gonna,
he was in the hospital
for... Why are you going to put your brain into a position to be shocked like that if he gets hit right? So that's one of the ones they should like, you know, we're done. Nope, you can't do it. You had previous brain damage. We're out. So you don't want to do that to yourself. But, you know, like Jamie said earlier, money rules everything around us.
Right. People need money, right? But I just think for a guy like Lamar, come on. And for the point that you just made, Rob, you know, I mean, they thought he was not going to make it.
Yes.
Yeah, he struggled. And then if he has to lose a fight to Aaron Carter,
Yeah.
Like, I mean, at that point.
They're harder, though, right?
Hey, they're going to fool all of us, and they're going to come out with the big gloves. You know the big gloves you do?
Like the sumo like gloves that are just like.
Exactly.
So they're going to make a box in Hulk gloves. Hands or something, you know? Like, yeah. That would
because
be funny.
I'm really worried about this one, because if you look at the way Nate got hit, just imagine if that was Lamar get hit like that with you know previously happened to him. So that's going to be that's dangerous.
Game at All Star Weekend, right? It's like these celebrities that want to be hoopers, and they go out and they get on the court, and some of them look okay, and the other ones you're like, oh, this is a little uncomfortable just watching them try to shoot a basket, right? And I feel like that's what these celebrity boxing matches are. You look at these guys and you're like, oh, this is, for the most part, it makes me feel a little uncomfortable watching them.
I don't know why we're continuing to do it, but Barstool is pulling in pay-per-view money to watch Jose Canseco fight a 22-year-old staffer. Now granted, they didn't even fight, because Canseco, like, I think he took a dive in 12 seconds or something like that. He made $1 million. So I guess if you need the $1 million, you go do it.
But I would do it for $1 million.
Oh,
you can take a dive, Jamie, for $1 million.
Come on, Jamie, me and you in the ring. $1 million.
$1 million. And I bet you Rob takes the fall, man. Rob's
I'm
like,
taking the fall.
Oh, no.
Hey, I'm going to get so much. So we're going to have a deal. Jamie, you're going to get so much. You're like, Jamie Maggio knocked out Robert Ory. And then you're going to blow up and just give me 10%. That's all.
You're first, folks.
I'll just take my Don King fight promoter cut for mentioning it on the podcast. That's
Hold on. I don't know if I want to, you know, Don King, you know, he took 90%, didn't he?
Well, that's why I said I was going to take my Don King cut. I didn't say I was going to take a de-escalated cut. Take my Don King cut. I brought it up, for God's sake. All right. There's a couple things I want to get to before we do. Jamie, we end the show every week with what we call the post-game presser. I got 5 random questions from listeners and fans that people want to know of Robert, so we're going to include you in that as well, and we'll have some fun with some random questions.
What about the
questions.
Big shot of the week?
Oh, we're doing that right now, man. Big shot of the week this week is going to go out to a Bulls fan named Mac McClendon.
Oh, yes.
Did you
this.
See this?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know if Jamie did, but Mac was at the Bulls game, and I can't remember where they were playing, but they were not in Chicago, and he was wearing a really old Michael Jordan jersey. And
it wasn't even a real Michael Jordan jersey.
Well, like Stacey King and Adam Amin on the broadcast decided that they're going to have a little fun at Mac's expense.
Isn't that the Bulls fan?
Yeah.
That looks like an old jersey.
I'm not going to lie. That looks a little bit like the one that you know, like,
that might
like you. Found that on the street vendor, maybe.
Buy one, get two free.
You want this... NyQuil Jordan jersey.
It's like he might have made that at home. I'm just kidding, big fella.
Hey, wherever you represent,
team.
Brother. Wherever you represent.
Team, baby. Where to rep the Bulls.
It says Michael Jordan on the back.
All right. So that's Adam Amin and Stacey King on the Bulls broadcast.
And it's the crazy thing. When I heard this, I was like, really? And to me, that's one of the things that always pulls at my heartstrings. When you don't know what this guy's situation is, you're going to talk about, you know, that's probably all he could afford.
I'm sure.
Hell, I wouldn't even buy my own jersey right now because they're too damn expensive and I got money. And I'm like, no. So people got to look at it like, I'm like, and for the Bulls to reach out and find this guy, you know, they should send him all types of gear. I mean, the whole get up.
I think everything. They did, because now we fast forward to the fourth quarter of the game, where I think word has now gotten back to the Bulls that they were kind of crapping on a fan on TV.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the broadcast now in the fourth quarter.
They got the tweets out there. They heard us. They heard the jokes out there.
Absolutely.
But Mac, let us tell you something, man. We just had some fun with you. You know you're a big Bulls fan. We love it. And we are sending you a gift care package.
Yes, sir.
From us and the Bulls, because you being a great sport about us having fun with you tonight.
We appreciate
you. And we appreciate
bro.
You, man. That's a nice jersey. I don't know if I'd wear it, but it's, you know.
They keep going. Here's why he gets the big shot of the week. Here was Mac's response.
Hey, thanks for the love, everybody. Hey, I'm a lifelong Bulls fan, and my jersey is real. It's just vintage. It's old. I got this shit back in like the 90s. That's all right, though. I still much love to Stacey King and the Chicago Bulls, man. No hate my way. I'm still a Bulls fan.
I just love that you have a fan who was putting maybe, like Robert, you said, kind of a not so great situation where they're kind of, and he just laughed his ass off and he took it in stride and they rewarded him for it. So good job, Mac. That was funny. You did
That's
good.
One of the times you really appreciate social media, because if this had been back when I was playing, he was just got ragged on, would have never knew and went on about his business.
And then Jamie and I would have made fun of you behind closed doors.
I just put him to the face.
Exactly. Yeah, Jamie will do it to your face now.
Like, not to your
she's
face.
Ragged. Hey, I've made so many mistakes when I first came onto the show. We worked together and she knew I was a rookie and I make mistakes. She just looked at me like,
Freaking rookies. Freaking rookies. All right. One more thing before we get to the post-game press conference. We do a segment on the show as well called That's Unfortunate, where we bring a clip from sports television to the table that maybe didn't work out in someone's favor. I have two nominees for you this week in That's Unfortunate. We will start with Colin Cowherd breaking down Tampa Bay's Super Bowl win.
Between Tampa and Los Angeles, it's like we've got all... Two cities have glommed all the championships and players.
Yeah, kind of unfortunate. Kind of unfortunate. Sorry, Colin. One more time.
Between Tampa and Los Angeles, it's like we've got all. Two cities have glommed all the championships and players.
Oh, the best is the look on Joy's face during that, too. Joy Taylor's like,
Amy, you got to take that one first.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, what?
My biggest
Amy got, has to go first.
Have you had a gaffe like that on television?
Is saying something like that on TV because it will live forever in social media. And I mean, it happens, though. We all misspeak. It happens. But
It just happened to me a couple of games ago. Well, you say certain things you would say when you're chilling at home in the barbershop on the corner. And I didn't say anything that nobody hasn't said on TV before. I just said, oh, you over here chilling in the corner and the ball comes in. And you say, oh, shit. I'm like, oh, I said, oh, shit. You know, you're not supposed to say shit. So that's the only thing that's ever happened to me. It's not, nothing
it's
like
not
saying titties.
You're not talking about two titties on television?
No, I never
it's always
said
a good
titties.
Step in the right direction. All right.
Oh, what was the other one last week with the guy in the Senate? He said...
You were talking about Chuck Schumer. Yeah. Oh, my God. Here, give me 2 seconds. Let me see if I can find Chuck Schumer from week one. Where the hell did you go, Chuck? Chuck Schumer was talking, Jamie, about the insurrection on Capitol Hill.
There will be a trial, and when that trial ends, senators will have to decide if they believe Donald John Trump incited the erection... insurrection against the United States.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
So which one is worse, titties or erection?
in this point, because it's political talk versus sports talk.
He said erection on the Senate floor. like screwing something up on FS1, okay, fine. You're on the floor of the U.S. Senate talking about erection.
And you would use the word screw and erection in the same sentence.
That's absolutely right. I don't know how to pronounce his name. The guy who plays for Pitt, Audis Tony, I think is his name. One of the players for Pitt, talking about Pitt's competition this season. And he had an unfortunate moment this week as well.
The teams that we got too comfortable and relaxed with, they just busted in our mouth. And we just had to... eat that up and take it on our chin and bounce back.
No, that's so bad.
I know, right?
There's so many sexual innuendos in sports.
Oh no, they're
be careful, right?
Hence, we have started a segment for them.
did he really say that?
Yeah, one more time.
Let me hear that again.
We got too comfortable and relaxed with. They just busted in our mouth, and we just had to. Eat that up and take it on our chin and bounce back.
Oh, that is unfortunate.
Did he get paid? Like someone made him a bet. Like you won't say all these things.
I think you're right because there's no way that just happens to string itself together that way.
He must have been mad at the coach or mad at the system or something. He said, you know what? I got something. I'm gonna say this.
I'm gonna drop this one on them. See how they feel about it.
I heard bust you in the mouth used like in terms of fighting. Like, oh, he hit me in the mouth, but yeah. That was just like
he went straight to bust in your mouth, which is never. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. no.
Yeah.
Terrible. All right. Well, if you ever find a clip for That's Unfortunate, you can send it to bigshotbobpod@gmail.com. You can find us, obviously, on Twitter and Instagram and all those fun places. Forward along things that are just unfortunate. All right. Well, let's wrap up with the postgame presser this week. Five random questions from friends and listeners online as we get to know Rob, myself, and now Jamie. This one, a rare mint condition Michael Jordan card sold at auction this week. I don't know if you saw this. For $1.4 million. It was like a 97 Upper Deck jersey card where it's like a piece of his jersey. Only 23 of them were ever made. $1.4 million. What's the most valuable sports collectible you think you own?
Oh, wow. Rob's probably got to think about that. You probably have a lot of good stuff, Rob.
Well, I have, you know, I thought I had something that was going to be valuable. And that was, I had this thing from Lance Armstrong with all his Tour de France signed by him, but I don't know if that's worth anything now, you know? So I got to find out.
It's got to be worth something, right?
I don't know. You know, with the scandal with him and the doping, I'm like, is it really worth anything? So, you know, I don't know. You tell me.
I think it's got to be worth something. I don't know how much, but something. Jamie, do you have any valuable sports collectibles that you think you're hanging on to?
Yeah, I grew up on Long Island, big New York Giants fan. I got one time I've ever been like starstruck, twice actually. Patrick Ewing was the other one. No, not you, Rob, not you. Lawrence Taylor.
Put your hand down.
Taylor. I got Lawrence Taylor to sign a hat. And going back to the guy in the Jordan jersey at the Bulls game, I have some Giants gear that belonged to my grandfather. I have a hat and I have a t-shirt and they are tattered and old and they probably were bought from the street vendor down the block from the stadium. But, you know, I mean, there's sentimental value, but I got LT to sign a hat, which is pretty cool. And Michael Strahan to sign a picture of him and Eli on the float. Eli's the best quarterback. I love that team.
That's
only
great.
Got to beat Tom Brady, right? Twice.
Yeah. Beat him twice. Yeah.
I have jerseys from Dream, I have jerseys from Clyde, I have a jersey from Shaq, and I have a jersey from Kobe. So I have those hidden away. So, you know,
you said there were game jerseys from right? Kobe.
Yeah, they're game jerseys. Oh, actually,
that's
worn
gotta
jerseys.
Be worth a bunch.
It's gotta be worth something.
Yeah. That's gotta be worth a lot.
Kind of SI cover for me that like him, I think, and Coop and Byron were on. Mm-hmm. I got all those guys up to sign it. That's a good one too.
That's a very good one.
What about you?
Oh, I have an autographed Jordan picture. I don't know how much it's worth, but I got it in the 90s. It wasn't like he signed it for me. It was just a session where he must have been signing 100 autographs. But my dad bought it for me for like $150, and I have it framed and it's at my house. But I've never gone to look. But everybody that always sees it is like, oh. Autographed Jordan picture. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not like it says, hey, to Rob, love you. You're my best friend. You know, Michael Jordan.
I forgot. I have something else. I didn't forget, but I don't like to talk about the people who've gone on to, you know, to a different world. You know, I tell you about my story with Gary Carter. And so I have my Gary Carter jersey that he signed right before he passed away. And that's probably, to me, that's more valuable than anything because he made it out to me and he heard my story about him. So that means more than anything to me, all the things I have.
So, a kid. Which is funny, Jamie, because Rob and I grew up a little bit of a Mets fan. Gary Carter was my all-time favorite player. So Rob and I share an all-time favorite baseball player, which is just weird and strange because it's a New York Met.
The one time I've cried twice on the air in my career. The first time was during doing a Gary Carter obit. Because growing up in New York, the 86 Mets is what, like,
the pinnacle.
Helped me as a little girl into being a sports fan, period. And then as I got older, I became a Yankees fan because I learned the history of Rob's face before that.
That you're already a long-suffering Knicks fan. There's no point also being a long-suffering Mets fan. I mean, you might as well.
Exactly. You
shift your allegiance.
Second time was the day that Kobe died, and I was doing a post-game interview with Kawhi on the court, and I just could not hold it together at all. But first time was Gary Carter. So we all have that in common, you guys.
Yes,
how about that?
Yes.
Look at that. Weird commonalities. What was your favorite city to play in, Rob? And I guess, Jamie, your favorite city to visit when you're traveling?
Atlanta.
All about them wings, man.
First of all, it's not because of Magic City and the wings. It's because, you know, I'm from the South. My dad lives in South Carolina. My mom lives in Alabama. So that's dead center. So both would come up and watch me play in Atlanta. So it's all about the family thing. It wasn't about the wings thing. The crazy part is, even how much I love Atlanta, I got my college buddies that live in Atlanta. Every time we would go to Atlanta, I would never hang out because I was always with my mom, my dad, doing the family thing. And so that's why I love playing in Atlanta, because I got to play in front of my parents, which is very, you know, my dad is, he didn't like to fly. My mom didn't like to fly, so they could drive and see me. So that was that's why on a personal note. But as far as other places, Miami, I'm in Miami, Trick.
I love South Beach. Jamie, what was your favorite place to go when you're traveling?
For the family aspect, kind of like what Rob was saying. But otherwise, I would say Chicago. It's great walkability. We stay at a great hotel. There's great shopping. There's great food.
All right. Well, a couple more quick ones here. I guess this one's probably more for Rob. I guess this goes to JB too. How much influence did your parents have on your career as a kid? Did they, like Rob specifically, did they push you to play? Were they like super involved, or was this more of a you thing?
It was more of a me thing. Growing up in the South, my mom was like, okay, we know you like to play all these sports, but we can't afford it. So you get to pick two, and one of them can't be football. So I'm like, okay,
she
baseball
didn't want
and
you
basketball.
To play football?
No, she thought I was too skinny and I would get hurt. So I played play baseball and basketball. And you think about that, you know, basketball, being a man with no money, just took that sport and just played it because it was a cheap sport to play.
Yeah.
So that's basketball.
What position did you play in baseball?
I pitch first base and center field. Center field was my favorite, then pitching, and first base was just stuck with it because, stick the tall kid on first base. So he's a big target.
You could have worked for a major league roster. It seems to be their move. Tall guy, you play first. Who's someone you would love to have played with, current or past?
LeBron. LeBron right now is a guy because I just think he makes everyone around him better. And past is Isaiah Thomas. I think Isaiah Thomas is one of the best guards that ever played his game. He doesn't get enough credit for what he was able to do. And I know I had a chance to play with him, I thought, in Detroit when I got traded there, but the trade fell through. I never got a chance to play with him. So Isaiah and
Jamie, who's your favorite player, current and past?
Oh, man. Well, like, you guys know me in the 90s Knicks, and I really did love Patrick Ewing. James Worthy introduced me to Patrick Ewing when he was coaching in Charlotte, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it introduced me at a game, and I was like, it was very cool for me. Plus, like, the history of those two collegiately, it was kind of fun, fun moment. But and Anthony Mason, may rest in peace. But, you know, in the current game, I still enjoy watching Steph Curry. And I think it is because he plays with such joy and because he's undersized and all that stuff. And, you know, is sort of an underdog before he went on a massive dynasty run. But I love the way that he plays the game.
All right. Last question in the postgame presser. What's the first big thing you bought with a game check? I guess this is just for Rob. But what you got your first game check. What's the first big thing you bought?
Well, you know, you really get your money before you even, you know, even step foot on the floor. So I bought a car and a house because
what kind of car?
I bought a Lexus, the Lexus coupe. That's when they just first came out. You know, the coupes, that was the hot thing right there for me.
Ass in a coupe.
Hey, that's all I could really afford. It wasn't like, you know, I was like, okay, I'm not going to go spend $80,000 for a car, a Mercedes, a Lexus coupe, feel right there, like $60,000, $70,000. I'm like, okay, I'm going to roll out with this. You know, I was a rookie. I didn't have no money. I wasn't even making $1 million back then. So
where did you buy the house?
In Sugar Land, Texas. It was when I got drafted by the Houston Rockets. And it's like, everybody's like, well, get an apartment because you don't know. And I was like, no, why would I want to give somebody my money for free? I'd just buy a house and then sell the house if I had to get traded. And I eventually sold a house and made money off it. So Smart move by Rob.
Big investment. All right. Well, that's all she wrote for the post game presser. So, well, Jamie, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for wasting time with us today.
So fun.
What did you think of the show today, Kevin Harlan?
Pull up your pants, take off the bra, and be a man.
Follow the show on Twitter at Big Shot Bob Pod for links to all our guests and all sorts of fun. The Big Shot Bob Pod is a presentation of Live by Live's Podcast One and Podcast One Sportsnet.